lower number. If someone told me that seawater has a radio impedance of 10 ohms, I'd believe them. It's in that neighborhood. It's a much, much lower number. And so, because of the very different velocity factor you get for a signal traveling down a piece of wire that's buried in seawater, you need a very different length of wire to hit resonance. You need different impedance matching networks. So without a doubt, you make a change in the design of the antenna when you make it work underwater versus in the air. But once again, the exact impedance of the medium, water or air, almost doesn't matter once you've done the correct design and tuning procedure. I know that what I just said is not simple, and there's a lot more going on here. There are people who are going to disagree with me. There are people who are very familiar with Maxwell's equations who will tell you that, yes, when I designed that antenna, the 377 ohms of free space was part of that design. I'm a little skeptical of that. Let me drop it. For 35 years, when I was working for Airborne Instruments Laboratory, on almost a daily basis, I was working with the antenna engineers in the antenna engineering department. And I can tell you that almost none of those guys doing an antenna design ever started out with, or in the middle of the process, used the Maxwell's equations. The main reference they used, quite a few of them, was the ARRL antenna book. They would put it on their shelf and turn it around backwards so you couldn't see the spine of the book. So they weren't advertising what they were, but that's one of their frequently used references, the ARRL antenna book, used by the antenna engineers in the antenna department. So, if you really want an antenna engineer, you have to hire an experienced ham radio operator, as I see it, Bill. W2SAW, KQRIW, the TechNet.
Okay, I think I get where you're going with that. Yeah, I was trying to think of, if you took out the space and you put a 377 ohm transmission line where there's space, you'd certainly get a big standing wave ratio from the 50 ohm line, and from the, like you say, space isn't a transmission line.
Well, yes and no. Is space a transmission line? Once you've launched that signal with a particular antenna pattern from a particular antenna, that signal is going to propagate through space. It's going to follow the inverse square law. In other words, every time you double the distance between that transmitter and your receiver, you're going to get one quarter the power, because the sphere that's around that transmitting antenna, every time you double the radius of that sphere, quadruple the amount of area of that sphere. Therefore, a antenna out there some distance away has a fixed amount of area to that antenna that's doing the receiving, and when you double the distance, it's going to get one quarter of the signal, 60 dB down. And that law keeps working over and over again. That Voyager spacecraft out there, three times the distance to Pluto, 12 billion miles away, Voyager number one. Here we are, launched in 1977, so that I guess it's almost 40 years away when we launched it. It's moving away from us at something like 30,000 miles an hour. That signal is still being received every week by NASA. Every week, NASA sends a signal out there to Voyager saying, how's it going? What do you see? What do those cosmic rays look like out there? And so on. And that signal takes, 18 and a half hours one way to get there, 37 hours round trip time at the speed of light, talking to Voyager. Boy, is that a long delay line. Wow. Let me drop. And every time you double the distance between us and Voyager, you're going to get one quarter of the amount of signal, 60 dB less signal. Right now, 12 billion miles of distance gives you a free space loss of 315 decibels. In other words, if you take the ratio of the power that Voyager transmits and the power that we receive 12 billion miles away, that ratio is a number with 1 and and 33 zeros after it. That's really a weak, weak signal. But it never stops. No matter how long, no matter how far a Voyager is away from us, that signal will always be there. It's going to get weaker. You have to use a more and more narrow receiver. You have to tell Voyager, transmit the data slower and slower so that we can get it through the narrow band receiver. But it keeps working. So Voyager is a beautiful proof of this philosophy I've got. Let me drop. That once you and I transmit a signal with our antenna, that signal goes to every single cubic meter of this universe. It goes everywhere. You can't stop it from doing that. You may worry about whether or not you've got a sensitive enough receiver to listen to that signal a zillion miles away. And it's going to take some good engineering to make sure you've got enough signal strength. But the signal keeps getting weaker and weaker, but it never goes to zero. The signal doesn't get tired and stop going there. Which you may have heard the story about one of the antenna request for quotes that was issued by a company I once worked for, where they were literally asking an antenna to be built where at 900 megacycles the signal went out there for 10 feet and then stopped. They wanted the signal, they wanted the antenna to be designed in such a way that the transmitted signal would go out there on 10 feet and stop and go no further. They didn't want the signal to be interfering with adjacent hardware. They wanted the signal to stop. And with great difficulty, I had to tell them, please don't issue that request for quote. You'll have a whole bunch of antenna companies laughing at us. Because it's a complete misunderstanding of the laws of physics. If the antenna transmits a signal at all, unless you put a perfect shielded room around that antenna to stop that signal at the shielded room wall, unless you do that, the signal's going to keep on going. And by the way, even with that shielded room wall, you're not stopping the signal. You're just drastically attenuating it. A state-of-the-art $63 million antenna chamber that I worked on at Edwards Air Force Base, it shields the signal by 100 dB. The walls of the signal of that chamber makes any signal from the outside versus the inside 100 dB weaker. But now if you're trying to use that chamber to test Voyager, which is overcoming 315 dB of loss, you can't do it in that chamber. So you can attenuate a signal, you can't kill it. And you can assume that at some distance the signal gets so weak that it's useless for your particular equipment. That may be true, but the signal is always there. Ain't that crazy, Bill? W2SAW, K2RAW, obviously it's opposite of common sense.
It's amazing, Dick. It never ceases to fascinate me and keep my head twisting around these ideas. But I was just wondering, did you ever try to scale your RFID antenna to 70 centimeters or 2 meters?
No, I didn't, but it definitely could be done. The antenna itself was made out of copper foil, the prototype. The final product was made out of nickel-plated brass. But can I make an antenna designed at night? One of the beautiful laws of antenna design is that if you take all of the dimensions of an antenna and scale them to the new wavelength, you get the exact same performance. So if the element at 900 megs was half an inch wide, and you make it operate at half that frequency, which is twice the wavelength, and you make it an inch wide instead of a half inch wide, you'll get the exact same performance. So could I do that? Absolutely. So that's an interesting point. By way of that particular three-element Yagi, I could make a Yagi that is extremely low standing wave ratio across, let's see now, that's 16, that's 902 to 928 is 26 megs. 13. I could make a Yagi antenna on 432 that's 13 megahertz wide, which has a standing wave ratio of 1.05 to 1 by just simply scaling that design. However, let me drop it. When I build a Yagi on 432, I want some real gain. the Yagis that I use in 432 have got 19 elements. So a three-element Yagi is not as useful, not as high a gain as I'd like to have. The next question is going to be, could I take the design philosophy and make a 19-element Yagi out of wide element? Yes, I could. But the super low standing wave ratio, in the case of an RFID handheld reader, you need a super low standing wave ratio because the handheld reader is a CW radar. It's transmitting and receiving at the exact same instant of time on the exact same frequency. So you want the reflection from your own antenna to be as weak as possible so it doesn't jam your receiver that's connected to that antenna. You want to be able to hear the echo from a RFID tag. And so in that environment, you need an extremely low standing wave ratio because that crazy design of how an RFID reader works. For the average ham radio operator on 432, he is not transmitting and receiving simultaneously on the exact same frequency. We don't do it that way. If it was a repeater, we've got 5 megs of offset between transmit frequency and receive frequency. Let me drop it. And we got a fancy duplexing filter to keep the two separated to the transmitter and the receiver with 120 dB of isolation in that duplexing filter if you get it lined up just right. So I could do it, but it's too small a Yagi for my normal operation, and the great advantage of super low standing wave ratio, I don't need it because I don't operate that way. But that's an interesting point of view. I never thought of that, Bill. WQSAW. Got any other crazy ideas? K2RIW and the TechNet.
Thank you very much, Duke. No, that was great. And back to you. This is Phil, W2SAW. Thank you, Duke.
Now, is there anyone else listening to us tonight that has got any further questions on any of these subjects or any other subjects? We only had 2 check-ins tonight, possibly because it's the holiday and everybody's busy. Is there anyone else that wants to join us to sign in? Give me your call letters and name right now. K2RIW and the TechNet.
This is AC2IS. Query.
2MU, reading the mail. Good evening, everybody.
2NYW, listening.
Okay, I heard something LU. Before that, I heard AC2IS. Something LU. And something JYW, I think I heard. So, Bill, AC2IS, you've got a query. What's the difference between a query and a question? AC2IS, K2IW, go ahead, Bill.
I think the major difference between query and question is that I can say query faster than I can say question. So that seems like a pretty off-topic question, but a question about reflectors, like dishes. This is really optical as opposed to RF. But if you prefer to take other RF questions first, let me know. AC2IS.
The optical reflector you've got on the 200-inch diameter Mount Palomar telescope in Palomar, California. I think that's the name of the town. If you fed it a microwave signal instead of an optical signal at the focal point, it would still give you a beautiful reflection. It would still give you a predictable amount of gain. So whether you use a reflector at an optical frequency or at an RF frequency is strictly your choice. And whether or not the frequency is optical or RF is strictly a matter of our definition. You and I know what 600 megahertz is. I got a gut feeling for 600 megahertz. Go 1,000,000 times higher in frequency, and that signal is now in the middle of the optical band, and your eye will respond to it. But it's the exact same radio frequency signal. It's the exact same electromagnetic wave propagated through air, for instance. So optical and radio, it's just a matter of wavelength or frequency. But the exact same laws of physics work. AC2IS, K2IW, go ahead with your query/question, Bill.
Okay, I think I have a solution, but it's not a general solution. But the question was, I can, in theory, the thought experiment, take a parabolic reflector. I can cut off the narrow end of this reflector, and then if I point this reflector at a light source, basically it should funnel all the light in through the hole behind it, right? If if you look at a parabolic antenna, at some point you get I guess you look at it sort of end-fire style, as you, the term you mentioned earlier. You point that at the sun, and then at some point there's a 45-degree angle, right, so that that is in line, in the same plane with your focal point. And if you cut it off at that point, everything, all the light that comes in there, assuming you pointed it straight at the sun, should be funneled in through the hole. So the question is it possible, how could a reflector be built such that it would work, it would accomplish the same goal, funneling all the light in through the hole, regardless of whether or not it was pointed in the correct direction? AC2IS, I wonder if that is possible.
Hey, you've used some words, Bill, that are going to need clarification. The magic about a parabolic dish is that when the axis of the parabolic dish is aimed at the source, the sun, for instance, and assume that your parabolic dish is, let me pick a number, 10 feet in diameter. All of that sunlight across that circle of 10 feet in diameter, hitting the surface of the parabolic dish, is going to come to one single focal point in front of the dish. It's all going to be focused at one focal point. And the magic about a parabolic dish is that every square inch of the reflector obeys the right angle of incidence equals the angle of reflection. So in other words, the angle of the sheet metal in that area is such that the signal bounces off of that piece of sheet metal and gets focused directly toward the focal point of the dish. That's criteria number one. And if you look at every one of those little square inches of that reflector, the signal from every one of them not only is redirected in the right direction for the focal point, but they all come out in phase. The actual path length of the signal from space hitting the reflector and getting to the focal point, all those path lengths are exactly the same. Let me drop. Now, there's an infinite number of shapes of various kinds of parabolic reflector that will do that. You can make a parabolic reflector with a very long focal length, where the reflector itself looks very flat. It's a very shallow bowl. Or you can make it with a very short focal length. The difference in the flatness of the reflector is called F over D, focal length to diameter ratio. When you make the focal length to diameter ratio equal to 0.25, the magic number, then the focal point is directly in the exact same plane as the perimeter. If I put a sheet of metal across the front of the reflector so that the sheet of metal is, in my case, 10 feet in diameter, and it's touching the perimeter of the reflector, at the center of that sheet of metal would be the focal point. So the focal point is exactly level with the perimeter of the dish at 0.25 F over D. Modern-day antenna engineers do not design a parabolic reflector that way. They make the focal length to diameter ratio a much bigger number. The favorite number these days is 0.6, not 0.25, 0.6. It's a much flatter dish. The focal point is way out in front of the dish. So there is no hole that the signal is flowing through. Yes, if you're talking about, let me drop this. You're talking about a compound reflector system called Cassegrain, where you've got the main reflector parabolic surface that we've been talking about, and then where the focal lens, focal point for that reflector is, you put another reflector, which is a hyperbolic shape. You can now redirect that signal back down toward the reflector and make it come out a hole in the center of the big reflector. That's a Cassegrain antenna system. And I think Palomar is a Cassegrain. But the average RF antenna, only a very small percentage of them are Cassegrain. The majority of them are so-called direct focus. In fact, the majority of them, there's probably 30 million 18-inch diameter dishes, parabolic dishes, that have something like a 0.6 FOVD, but they're an offset-fed parabolic surface. If you reshape that reflecting surface, you don't have to make the focal point fall right in the center. You can make it fall at the outer edge, so to speak, of the parabolic surface. The reason you do that is now when you mount the feed horn for that offset-fed parabolic surface, it doesn't cast a shadow in the middle of the dish. An ordinary direct-fed parabolic antenna, the feed horn you put in the center at the focal point casts a shadow onto the dish. And there's a little bit of a disadvantage of that. And one other thing you'd like to know, let me address it. If you did design a 0.25 FOVD, as they did for the dish that's at the Jedrell Bank in New England, Jedrell Bank, England, that is a dish of 0.25 FOVD. In those days, they liked the idea that the focal point was inside of the perimeter of the dish. Therefore, the dish gave them a natural shield of local man-made noise. And therefore, they thought that was a very good design way back in the dark ages when they built that 30 or 40 years ago. The reason you don't do that today is to think about the design of the feed horn. To design a feed horn that when you're transmitting, it's going to equally smear RF energy across the whole surface. And if the focal point is level with the perimeter of the dish, you're now asking for a feed horn that has a 180-degree beam width in order for it to illuminate that surface. To design a feed horn with a 180-degree beam width is impossible to get any reasonable performance out of it. Whereas if you make a much more shallow dish of the same diameter, you just make the dish more shallow, that makes the focal length much longer, and now the feed horn is a much more narrow, say 30 or 40 degree beam width, if you know what I mean. It's a feed horn you can now design. So maybe these characteristics of a parabolic dish are going to help you see a little bit more about how it works, Bill. AC2IS, K2IW in the TechNet.
Dick. The idea of feed horn being on the surface of the dish is very interesting. I'm just trying to play this through my mind, though. I was thinking in terms of sort of a hyperbolic design where you could just sort of trim it off in a plane with the focal point. Funnel all the light in, but then of course, as soon as this parabolic, hyperbolic dish, if you want to call it that, is not pointed at the sun or the radiation source, then it seems like you're going to lose some of that light. It's not going to make it through the hole. It might get bounced back out through the front of the reflector again. If you've got your feed horn on the surface of this other type of parabolic dish, is that going to change that? Is that going to mean that even if the sunlight is not approaching the antenna straight on? I guess what I'm looking for is no longer going to be parabolic. It would have to be some other shape, with the idea of capturing light that came in from any direction. Go ahead.
Now you got a little bit of a conflict of terms here, or a conflict of what I think you're trying to do. In the case of, say, for instance, the Goldstone dish for Deep Space Network, dish number 14, the Mars dish they call it, in Goldstone, California. By the way, I was there and I visited that antenna 2 o'clock in the morning one night. it has the highest gain you can achieve in that diameter, because they know they're going to be listening to things that are very far away. A whole bunch of spacecraft out there, including Voyager number 1 and Voyager number 2. The most high range, the longest range pieces of hardware that mankind has ever issued. So they know you're going to get as high a gain as possible. But think about that. Gain really means directivity. Directivity really means narrow beamwidth. So when you design an antenna for high gain, let me drop it. By definition, it's got to have a very narrow beamwidth. Because they speak to Voyager 1 and 2 at 8.5 gigahertz, that antenna has a beamwidth of something like 1/10 of 1 degree, plus or minus 0.05 degrees, rough number. You and I could look it up and find out the exact number, but it's an extreme sharp beamwidth. In order to achieve that gain, the only way you get gain out of an antenna is to have directivity. The only way you have directivity is that when you're transmitting, you take all the signals that would have been in various directions and you direct them all in one single direction. This pencil beam that's 1/10 of a degree wide, in my example. So if you're trying to design a high gain antenna that can capture a whole lot of signal, but it doesn't care about direction of arrival of the signal, you don't have to aim it at the sun, so to speak. You've got a conflict of terms. You can't have gain without directivity. If you've got directivity, you're now very sensitive to the way you aim it. Aim that dish away from the sun, you pick up none of the sun, per se, in the normal manner. Aim that antenna away from Voyager, you'll hear nothing from Voyager. Or Voyager itself, it has a 3/10 of a degree beamwidth. If it doesn't aim its antenna within plus or minus 0.15 degree at the Earth, then we're not going to hear Voyager. Let me drop it. Now, when you're building a compound reflector antenna system where you've got a great big main reflector that's parabolic, and at the focal point of the first reflector, you put a second reflector, which is usually hyperbolic, that reflects the signal back down through a hole in the center of the big reflector, you could call it a folded optical design. Most frequently, it's called a Cassegrain antenna system, because I think a man with that last name invented the thing way back in the optical days. So many of the optical techniques of good optical telescopes can be applied to good radio telescopes, and they work like a charm. But to make a surface that reflects, that'll be active on a signal regardless of what direction it arrives, you can build a surface that does that. But it no longer has high directivity. It no longer has high gain. So, as a radio circuit, it can't have it both ways, high gain and insensitive to direction of arrival. Now, when I said in the case of a 0.25 F over D dish, a very deep parabolic dish, like Jedrell Bank is, and I said if you put a sheet of metal, so to speak, across the reflector, a flat sheet of metal across the reflector so it's touching the perimeter of the reflector. In the center of that round sheet of metal is where the feed horn is mounted. That's the focal point. And the focal point is in line with the perimeter of the dish. It's not touching the perimeter of the dish. So you never mount the feed horn touching the reflector, so to speak. But modern-day good antenna design, 0.6 F over D is the most popular number, which is a much flatter dish, much less curvature to it. Same diameter.
Repeater, timeout.
Same diameter, but a much longer focal length that now sits out in front of the dish three or four times further away from the apex of the dish compared to the 0.25 F over D of Jedrell Bank. So the feed horn way out in front is a much more desirable design, because now the feed horn is much broader in beamwidth, a much more narrow in beamwidth. It's an easier horn to design. And the overall dish performance, when you go through all the fine details, you end up with higher efficiency, higher aperture efficiency. And the next step of improvement on that is to build the surface in such a way that the focal point is not down the center, but offset from the center. And you're about to there's many ways you can get at that. Let me show you one way to do it. If I knew I'm going to make a 10-foot diameter offset fed parabolic dish, and on a piece of paper, I design a dish that's not 10 feet in diameter, but 20 feet in diameter. So my dish design on paper is 20 feet in diameter. And the feed horn is right in front of that parabolic reflector, right down the center of the axis. If I now chop away the lower half of that reflector, and of the reflector that's left, I trim the edges a little bit, but because that reflector, even though I chopped away the bottom half, all of the signal that hits the remaining reflector still is going to focus at the exact same position where the feed horn was. I don't move the feed horn. I change the aiming of the feed horn. I aim the feed horn now at the center of the remaining air.
Repeater, timeout.
I change the aiming of the feed horn. I aim the feed horn at the remaining area of the parabolic reflector that I didn't chop away. As you can tell, the remaining parabolic reflector, even though it started off with the exact same formula for how you designed that surface, if you're now considering only that surface all by itself, it looks like a more complicated formula. It really isn't. But the advantage of that offset fed, I started off with a 20-foot diameter parabolic, surface. I chopped away the lower 10 feet of it, so what remains is the upper 10-foot diameter. And now I use it all by itself with the exact same feed horn, just re-aimed. And the feed horn is now going to be a little bit more narrow in its beam width because it's feeding a smaller area of surface from the exact same distance. That's how you design an offset fed parabola. And there's more than 10 or 20 million of them, all of these satellite receiving systems, these dish network systems, are a 18-inch diameter offset fed parabola. And the great advantage of doing that is now the feed horn is off to one side. It doesn't cast a shadow on the dish. You end up with much higher performance. AC2IS, can you picture that, Bill? K2LIW in the TechNet?
Yes, Dick. I'm familiar with the direct TV antenna, the offset fed horns, if I'm saying that right. So here's, like I said, I didn't have a general solution to this problem, but let me know what you think of my solution. Thinking that if I draw out this parabola or hyperbola, however we are referring to that, then you trim off the back half, drawn it on a sheet of paper, right? So that's two-dimensional. But then if instead of spinning that, right, to make a cone shape, they bend that to make two walls, straight walls that have that parabolic curve, visualize that, have a slot down the middle. And any light source in that plane could, the light from that should be directed to that slot in the middle. So then the your case here is, trying to capture sunlight, and I should be able to align that reflector, that antenna, whatever you want to call it, with the plane of the sun, how it's going to track relative to the Earth on any given day. And I think that should allow me to collect most of the light that hits my reflector. What do you think of that solution? Does it break any rules, AC2IS?
The main reflector of a parabolic dish antenna is a parabolic shape. It is not a hyperbolic shape. Parabolic. Only if you're making a folded optic system, then the secondary reflector out in front, the small one, happens to be hyperbolic. In other words, it's concave. Whereas the main parabolic reflector is convex. I'm trying to say. The hyperbolic reflector really is convex. The main parabolic reflector is concave. So when it comes to focusing RF energy to a focal point, most likely going to use a parabolic reflector, not any other shape. Then you talked about taking a parabolic reflector and changing the shape in some way that it becomes a cone. I don't know what you were talking about. The parabolic reflector has an exact equation in three-dimensional space as to where every little bit of that sheet metal is going to be located if it's going to be a parabolic reflector that does the focusing that you desire. You take that reflector, you take that sheet metal that was a beautiful parabolic reflector, and now you grab it and rebend it in some other way. It's no longer a parabolic reflector. It no longer focuses energy the way it used to focus. And what you're asking here, Bill, is a little bit similar. Let me drop this. To the problem I ran into when I was at the National Radio Astronomy Observatory at a meeting, oh, 10, 15 years ago, in which some of the astronomers that were not so familiar with radio techniques, they were very familiar with the way you operate a radio telescope and the way you study the data you get off of it, but the way the radio telescope itself works, the antenna portion of it, they were not very familiar with it. They knew that you can get a lot of high gain performance out of a radio telescope antenna if it's large in diameter, but now it's only focused to one point in space, depending on where you aim it. And they were very interested in gamma ray bursts. So, and they know that each gamma ray burst, when it happens somewhere in the universe, and you haven't got the vaguest idea where the next one is going to come from. You may see it from the northern hemisphere, the southern hemisphere, the eastern half of the world, the western half of the world, where the next gamma ray burst is going to happen. You have no idea. So they wanted a high-gain antenna that can listen to every direction in space at the same time and have high gain at the same time. And it's way beyond the laws of physics, with one exception. If you want to be able to use a high-gain antenna aimed at every direction in space that you care about, and if those directions in space, there happens to be 1,000 of them, then build 1,000 parabolic dish antennas and aim each one of them at your desired point in space. So if you're willing to build 1,000 radio telescopes, you can now, with high gain, look at 1,000 points in space at once. But if you're trying to design one single antenna...
Repeater, timeout.
He was asking me, is there a way of designing one single antenna that can give you all the gain that we're now getting at this one point in space, maybe it's a 1 degree beamwidth, but it really looks at thousands of square degrees at once? And the answer is no, not with one antenna. The gain is coming from directivity. Directivity means that the main lobe has got a very narrow beamwidth. Very narrow beamwidth means it's only looking at one point in space at a time. You can't have it both ways, high gain and broad beamwidth. That's asking for... you just can't get that combination. So you were taking the parabolic surface made out of sheet metal, and you were curving in some other way that you called a cone, and you hope that this cone is now going to gather light. I mean, if I built a cone-shaped funnel like a feed horn, a microwave feed horn, and that microwave feed horn has a certain mouth diameter. In other words, the wide open end has a certain amount of area to it. That amount of area at a radio frequency determines the beamwidth. So a high gain horn is also going to have a very narrow beamwidth, even though it may look like a funnel to you. You may think that the signal is just going to go down there no matter what direction it starts at. Doesn't work that way. It's not a funnel. It still has a very narrow beamwidth. You just got a different way of feeding that surface that is the open end of that horn. Where the open end of the horn, let me drop it. If the open end of the horn happens to be 10 foot wide and 10 foot high, and I compare the gain of it compared to a 10 foot diameter parabolic dish, except for comparing square to round, I'll have the exact same amount of gain. The number of square wavelengths of the emitting surface, or the number of square wavelengths of the receiving surface, determines the gain, determines the directivity, therefore determines the beamwidth. AC2IS, K2RIW, go ahead, Bill.
This is AC2IS. I see using the word cone was a mistake. So how else to describe the shape? Let's say a nose cone kind of shape. Let's say you've got a hypothetical missile. Most of it is a cylinder, but the nose cone on the top, let's say, is a parabola that's sort of facing inward towards the rest of the rocket. And if you drew a two-dimensional parabola on a sheet of paper and you spun it around, you could get that, sweep out that area of the nose cone of your rocket, right? But if instead of doing that, instead of spinning that paper around, sort of the axis of the cylinder, the rocket tube, instead of doing that, sort of held the sheet of paper in front of you and your pressed your two hands together as though you were making a prayer, and your sheet of paper was in between your two hands, and then you shift your hands left and right, right, as your parabola is pointed towards the sun, you would not be sweeping out that nose cone shape. You'd be sweeping out a different shape with a rectangular opening, kind of like the shape you would want if you were building, say, a solar cooker, where the focal point, instead of being a point, would not be a focal point, but it would focus the light along, say, the length of a hot dog that you wanted to cook in your solar cooker. So, but if I apply the same kind of if I apply the same kind of concepts and cut the back half off of that in the plane of the hot dog, I guess. Now I've got a slot in the middle of those two sides, and I believe that as long as the sun is sort of in the middle of that, but anywhere along the length of the hot dog, it should still gather all the light. What do you think of that, AC2IS?
By the words you used, Bill, I was not able to get a mental picture. And I'm going to tell you something else that maybe will help. Let's assume now that I started off with a dish that's 30 feet in diameter. And I'm standing in front of the dish at the focal point. I'm looking straight down the axis of the dish. I could, if I want to, take a chainsaw and take a pure vertical cut to the right of center and to the left of center. I could cut away most of the parabolic reflector. So what exists is a vertical stripe down the center that has a parabolic shape, and maybe it's only 1 foot wide. I've now got a parabolic stripe, parabolic sector. That particular antenna, because it's got the same up and down dimension it used to have, will have the exact same vertical beam width. But because most of the material horizontally has been removed, it's now going to have a fantastically wide horizontal beam width. Let me drop. So that section of a parabolic surface that I just designed, and there are antennas like this, is very wide horizontally in my example, very narrow vertically. If you could see that antenna pattern in three-dimensional space, it would be a horizontal beaver tail. It would be very narrow and vertical, very broad and horizontal. So because I've made the beam width very large in one direction, I now could orient that in such a way that for a significant number of hours of the day, without moving it, it's going to track the sun. So I can build a surface, a parabolic antenna, that's not symmetric in horizontal and vertical beam width. Because I've removed a lot of area, and gain is a function of not only beam width, horizontal and vertical, but area, I've lost some gain. But if I'm willing to make that vertical stripe bigger, vertically, I can bring the gain back again. So I can design an antenna that becomes very broadband in one dimension. Therefore, a lot less tracking is required in that direction. I think you'd like to design a solar collector that still collects a lot of sunlight, brings it to a focal point, but doesn't have to be re-aimed every half hour. So I think you're trying to design your bill. That's one possible way of doing it. You described shaping sheet metal in such a way that it's heating a hot dog. I wasn't able to picture that. AC2IS, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Okay, I think we're almost on the same page, if not exactly on the same page. But you described taking out a chainsaw and cutting out a cross-section, essentially, of a parabolic dish. And then if I take that maybe a half step further and, say, replicate that cross-section that you've cut out 100 times and stack them up horizontally, then you've come, you know, pretty close to the shape that I described, except it's got a little extra, you know, curvature to it, minimal curvature. It's not, you know, perfectly flat horizontally as you traverse it horizontally. I was thinking of, you know, basically that same shape, but where it was perfectly flat when you traverse it horizontally. Then, yeah, you could put your hot dog at the distance from the back of the dish. It would put it at the focal point, and then you should be focusing light onto the length of your hot dog. Right, then you cut the back of it off. It's sort of at the distance from the back of the dish to your hot dog. You cut off that whole back of the dish, and then it seems like you'd be focusing the light almost 100% through that spot. I could see if the sun is, you know, horizontally off at a 45 degree angle, that essentially you sort of changed the shape of the dish. It's not perfectly horizontal. It's not perfectly I don't know how to say that exactly, but it would seem to, I guess, extend the length of your parabola a little bit, and therefore mess up the focus a bit. I guess that's right. AC2IS.
The most popular parabolic dish, Bill, is a parabolic dish which is a parabola that has been rotated around its axis, sweep out a three-dimensional object that looks like a bowl. Okay? That's not the only way you can build a parabola. You can build a parabolic cylinder. In other words, in cross-section in one direction, it is parabolic. In the other direction, it's linear. If I took a parabolic curve, aim it north, that's not going to do it. Take my word for it, you can build a cylinder, a half cylinder. You build a piece of pipe, where the piece of pipe has as much length as you desire, as much diameter as you desire. You slice the pipe the long way, so that's a half of a pipe. You slice it the long way, so that you really now got two separate pieces of pipe that'll look identical after you've done the slicing. And the remaining pipe, which used to be round in cross-section, you've now reshaped it into a parabola. It's a parabolic cylinder. The Vermilion River Radio Telescope, University of Illinois, built a very large radio telescope doing that. The advantage of doing that is it's sort of the opposite of what I described before. I described a parabolic stripe that gave you a very narrow beam width in the direction that the parabola is operating, a very broad beam width in the opposite direction where there wasn't...
Repeater, time out.
Where there wasn't very much sheet metal. And if you took that striped thing of mine and let's say you aimed it straight up as an antenna and then translated along the ground at right angles to the major dimension of the stripe, you're now making a parabolic cylinder. The Vermilion Radio Telescope did that. And by so doing it, they ended up with an antenna that was very narrow in azimuth and quite broad in elevation. And the reason they did that is they set it up in such a way that the narrow beamwidth direction is the direction that the Earth rotates. So this was a fixed antenna built into the ground, and it didn't have a focal point, it had a focal line. It was a line-focused antenna, just like your hot dog. So the focal point was a hot dog-shaped object. The focal point really was a whole bunch of little helical antennas along a row. And so that antenna was very narrow in right ascension, very narrow in azimuth. So as the Earth rotates, it would sweep across individual stars, if you know what I mean. You didn't have to aim the antenna. You let the Earth do the rotation for you. So a parabolic cylinder is another kind of antenna which set up correctly because it's very broad in one beamwidth, very narrow in the other beamwidth, if you desire. If you set it up correctly, it could now track the sun, so to speak, for a significant number of hours per day and doesn't have to be mechanically re-aimed. Is that closer to what you're looking for, Bill? AC2IS, K2RIW.
Yes, I think that's exactly the starting point anyway, right? And I'm thinking of using this to kind of a thought experiment, not a project I'm actually going to build. But I'd cut the back half. I don't know, half is not the right word, but, you know, cut it at the depth of the hot dog, and then I would think, quote-unquote, all, maybe not quite 100%, but very large amount of the light should pass through that slot at the back of this parabolic cylinder you're naming it. So is that not the case? Am I not going to get very near to 100% of the sodomite to pass through that slot? AC2IS.
The parabolic cylinder antenna has a line focus out in front of the parabolic cylinder surface. The parabolic cylinder surface is concave. Out in front of that concave surface is a, not a focal point, but a focal line, a line of focus. There is no slot in the parabolic cylinder. And if you did cut a slot in the cylinder, and you want the light to go down there, all right, the light by the focus of the parabolic cylinder is being focused on this horizontal hot dog, so to speak. Are you going to now refocus that energy back down through the slot in the parabolic surface? You're starting to make that into a cassegrain. I don't recommend that. If you were building this to collect sunlight, and if along that line focus in front is where you've got your black painted piece of tubing with fluid inside that gets heated by the sunlight, you're now, along that whole length of that black piece of tubing, you're heating up the fluid that's inside. Why don't you want to heat it right there? Why would you try to redirect that back down through a slot in the surface? You're going to end up with a lot of problems if you try doing that, Bill. AC2IS, K2RIW.
Okay, so yes, the idea is to basically to heat water, right? So you could run water through a tube where the hot dog would be. But my thinking is, okay, I'm going to have a clear barrel, and you know, unfortunately, the clear barrel is going to be full of water, and just the index of refraction involved there is going to kind of muck with things a little bit in terms of, you know, what direction maybe the light is coming from. But ignoring those factors for the moment, the reflectors would be sitting inside this barrel of water. So the idea would be to capture sunlight inside this barrel. So the idea is to take this, I guess we're calling it a parabolic cylinder. Place that inside the barrel, take that chainsaw, cut off the back of the parabolic cylinder so that the light gets directed through the slot. And you'd have the same kind of reflector on all sides of the barrel, facing outward. And basically, the back half of all of these would be painted black. So some light, I imagine, would make it through the slot and out a corresponding slot on the other side of the barrel, but that would be hopefully minimal. And for the most part, sunlight would hit the backside of one of these reflectors, which is painted black, which should do a very good job of absorbing that energy. That's the thought experiment. What do you think of that, AC2IS?
A parabolic cylinder focuses sunlight or radio to a line focus out in front of the parabolic surface. That's where you would locate a pipe that's collecting the energy and being heated. I don't know why in the world you're cutting a slot in the parabolic cylindrical surface, and what makes you think the light's going to want to go down that slot. The parabolic surface is focusing light to a point out in front of the parabolic surface. And if you think you're going to redirect that light from that line feed back down through the slot in the back of the dish, it ain't going to go there, Bill. Your slot is taking away some of the area of the parabolic cylinder at the disadvantage. And no matter how you collect the light at the focal point, it's not going to want to go back down that slot that you just cut. Because beam width of an antenna is a function of number of wavelengths in a particular dimension. Your hot dog has a diameter of a small number of wavelengths. Therefore, the signal reflected off your hot dog is a very broad beam width. It's not going to want to go down a slot in the parabolic cylinder. So I don't know why you're cutting a slot in the parabolic cylinder. If you do focus the energy from your parabolic cylinder onto a hot dog shaped focal point, which is going to be a black piece of pipe with water in it that you're heating, what's wrong?
Repeater, time out.
What's wrong with heating the water in that particular area at the focal point of the parabolic cylinder? That's the only place where the parabolic cylinder focuses. That's where you got to heat the water, Bill. No other place. AC2IS, K2IW.
This is AC2IS. There's nothing in particular wrong with heating water in a black pipe at this focal line. I'm doing a poor job of describing the surface. Am I still on? Let me drop for a second. Odd. I heard a repeater tone when I thought I was transmitting. So you can have a very deep parabola, right, with the focal line very deep inside your parabolic cylinder. It doesn't look very cylindrical at that point, but I think the term still describes the surface. And then if we pointed that parabolic cylinder straight up, and then if we had, say, a tub of water, dip that parabolic cylinder in the water until the point at which the hot dog met the surface of the water. The rest of your parabolic cylinder would still be extending above the surface of the water, pointed straight up. The back half that's under the surface of the water gets cut off. That's the quote-unquote slot I'm describing, very wide. As that height of the hot dog is measured from the